Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now we continue our presidential election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days. Let others focus on the horse race alone. We will explore an issue a show for 30 shows between now and the election. You can see our 30 Issues gallery at WNYC.org/issues and see the higher education graphic up there today. In fact, it's a fun interactive tool for college graduates to compare what you paid in tuition when you went. You can find your particular school and compare your tuition at that time to what your alma mater charges today. Go to WNYC.org/issues. And you'll see our America University 30 Issues in 30 Days, number 4. So this issue did not get off to a high road start this campaign season. Who can forget this Rick Santorum moment after President Obama said all Americans should commit to at least 1 year of higher education or career training?
President Obama once said he wants everybody in America to go to college. What a snob. They're good, decent men and women. Go out and work hard every day and put their skills to test that aren't taught by some liberal college professor and trying to indoctrinate them.
Santorum, who went to Harvard, later backed off. But who should go to college? And for our purposes today, what's the government's role in facilitating that? Call us if you have your own story of the government helping or hindering or just winding up in debt or just an opinion on what the government's role in facilitating a nation of college graduates should be. 212-433-WNYC or post to our comments page at WNYC.org/issues. We'll get two opposing views on that later in the segment. First, though, to give us some factual context, New York Times higher education reporter Tamar Lewin. Hi, Tamar. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you.
What percentage of Americans go to college today, and how has that changed over time?
Well, we used to be the best educated country. We used to have and I actually don't know the number. I should, but I don't. We used to have the greatest percentage of college graduates, and over the last decade, we've been falling and falling and falling and falling, and we're now, I think, number 16 in that, which is a concern because an educated workforce is more productive and your economy does better, and when our economy is in trouble, as Obama says, you want to educate your way out of it.
I was looking at some poverty statistics last night from the liberal think tank Demos, and they showed that a higher percentage of Americans without college are in poverty today than they were in 1970. In other words, the American dream of a middle-class lifestyle is more out of reach today than in the past without going to college. Have you seen similar stats?
Oh, yeah. And the unemployment rate, it's pretty terrible for all young people, but it's way, way worse for ones who have not gone to college.
And
you're not protected no matter what you do, but you have a much better chance of being employed if you have a college degree.
I think the unemployment rate for college graduates is 4-point-something% right now,
which
would mean it's half that for people without college.
Yeah, and that gap is a really significant one.
So to the Rick Santorum clip, him aside, because he's not the nominee, is there rough agreement between the parties and between Romney and Obama on what percentage of our population should go to college as a national goal?
Well, Obama got a slightly unfair rap in that from Santorum. He's not saying everyone should go study English and literature and history. He's saying people in this economy need 1 year of some kind of training, which could very well and increasingly very well be vocational training. And is it correct that for some kind of job security and some kind of hope of having a livable wage, you probably at this point need something beyond high school? Yeah, that's correct. I think anybody would look at the numbers and say, yeah, you do better if you have something more than a high school degree.
And in fairness to the president, as you said, that original statement that Santorum was reacting to in the context of the primary campaign was, quote, Americans should commit to at least 1 year of higher education or career training. So just to be accurate on that. But let's talk about the bills, the money. Can you compare college tuition inflation to overall inflation over time?
Well, you know, yes, it's much worse. It's even worse than healthcare, which is sort of the one we all think of as so terrible. And it's particularly, you know, it's hitting everybody especially hard because family incomes aren't going up and college costs are going so far up. The thing is, you know, the president is not in any position to make college easily accessible financially to everybody. Obama's done a whole lot in that line, but ultimately most tuition is going up because states don't have the money or aren't choosing to fund their universities as much as they used to. And you can use your bully pulpit and say, come on, guys, you know, it's really important, so give them more money. But there's not anything they can actually do to force the states to make it cheaper. But he's done really quite an extraordinary array of things, some of which Romney would like to quickly undo. Probably the biggest one is we used to have a system of loans that were based at banks, and the banks got billions of dollars in subsidy, even though the government took the risk for these. And Obama, after really fighting off one of the maybe the biggest lobbying campaign in history from the banks, made it direct lending by the government and put a whole lot, billions of dollars of that money into more Pell Grants for low-income students. Romney has said he would like it to be bank-based again, although it's probably a non-starter because I don't know where that money would come from anymore. He's also, I mean, so the Pell Grant for poor kids has expanded a lot, and he's also expanded income-based repayment so that if you get out of college and you don't get a job or you don't get a high-paying job or you're in a public service job, you can pay back your loan as a percentage of the money, your discretionary income, and it's going to be often a much smaller payment. And if you have no job, it might even be zero, but that counts as a credit. And if you do that for a longer period, they'll forgive the rest of your loans. So that was a big thing. But and he's gone around saying, you know, we're not going to let schools just raise their tuition as much as they want, or you know, they're going to have to lose eligibility for their federal, some parts of their federal aid if it goes up too much. And he's put into effect these kind of shopping sheets so you can compare financial aid officers. But really, there isn't a whole lot he can directly do.
Stephen in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Stephen. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. I love the show and always like listening to it as part of my morning program.
Thanks so much. So what do you think the federal government's role should be, or any government's role should be, in creating a nation of college graduates?
Well, Brian, I've been teaching at the college level for several years. I'm not going to name the institution that I'm at, but I've been teaching at a New York-based college for quite a long time. And what I will say is I always find it very regrettable when I have first-year students, freshmen, who come in and they realize that they're just over their head and college is not where they should be. And I think that's in part a weakness on government indirectly because public schools don't do a terribly good job in informing students on the benefits of vocational education. And I'd like to see government take away the stigma of vocational education. Vocational schools and technical schools, and also in just in terms of waste. I mean, there's a lot of federal and state aid that go to students, and after you know their second semester freshman year, they drop out, or they go to community college, or they just realize that for whatever many reasons. And I say this in no discredit or disrespect to the students. You know, they go on maybe to a technical career. But, you know, they've wasted a year of money and time.
Right. And you raise an issue that I should say to give people some context, that about a third of the callers on our board are also raising at least the fact that a lot of the students coming into college, coming into state-funded community colleges, are not actually ready for college-level work and need remedial work. So a lot of people are identifying this as a problem. Stephen will represent those for this conversation. And Tamar Lewin, New York Times higher education correspondent, to his point about vocational education, I feel like we've been having this conversation forever, that there are countries, and Germany always comes up as an example, that do a better job of letting, of somehow sorting people toward a more academic college career and some kind of vocational training that we wouldn't usually consider college in this country. And yet I wonder if the reason the U.S. doesn't do a better job at it is that we have this negative history of stereotyping people, especially racial minorities, and once upon a time women, though now women are most college students, into, you know, with the assumption that they're not college material, or an easier perception that an individual who may be black and poor or whatever is not academic material. And I think there's a kind of reaction against that in this country now.
I think we're very uncomfortable as a nation with this idea of sorting. It just doesn't sit well in the United States, where you want everyone to have that chance, that American dream college chance. There are a few little programs here and there where they've sort of put together this concern about remedial education and vocational education and are actually doing something that seems to be working. At the moment, if you go part-time to a community college and you need remedial education, your odds of ever getting out, of ever getting that degree, are very, very small. So at particularly some technical schools in Tennessee, they've thought, okay, we're going to put it all together. We're not going to send people into remedial education because it doesn't seem to work. We're going to set up cohorts. They're going to go. They're going to get the part that they need remediation in right along with the stuff that they're going to get credit for, and we're going to have them go full-time, and they have good graduation rates. There are, I think we are learning more about how to do this. It just isn't getting done everywhere.
Let's take another call. Ron in Queens. You're on WNYC. Hi, Ron.
Hi. How are you?
Okay. What do you think? What should government's role in creating a nation of college graduates be?
Well, I think it's important that the people that are receiving these types of loans or grants and monies for college should contribute before they even get anything. I'm in the military. I get tuition assistance, 100% of tuition assistance, but even though I'm in the reserve, there's some contribution to either vocational skills, some aptitude, I have to test, take an ASVAB. Some people may frown at the military, but there are a lot of countries out there that will pay for Israel being will pay for college if you're doing something in return. And this is before you even get the money for college and for degrees. I think it's important that the government should subsidize college students, and they should give them consideration in terms of what's the return before giving them the money.
Ron, thank you for your call. Tamar, to this point of the government providing 100% of the tuition, at least for some people, Governor Romney runs with pride in this campaign on a program that he started as governor of Massachusetts called the John and Abigail Adams Scholarships. And as I'm sure you know, they were full scholarships to Massachusetts state colleges for anyone in the top 25% of their high school classes, at least full tuition. And I want to play a clip of him talking about the program at a Latino Coalition Economics Summit in May.
So every year I'd ask a school principal to invite the students who had scored in the top quarter on that exam to come to a special assembly. Now, the kids didn't know when they came to the assembly why they were coming together. They didn't know they were in the top quarter. So I began speaking to them, and after some words about hard work, I'd ask them to reach under their chair and remove an envelope that we had taped there. And then I'd watch as each one of them would open the enclosed letter. Every year I'd stand in front of the room and the same scene would unfold. At first you could hear a pin drop. then each student's eyes would get big and proud smiles would creep across their faces that they found out that they were in the top quarter of those that had taken that exam. And then they'd read the part in the letter where they learned that they'd earned an Adams Scholarship. And then the smiles turned to cheers, and the sound was often deafening. I got more hugs, by the way, on Adams Scholarship Day than I did at Christmas at home.
Mitt Romney campaigning before the Latino Coalition Economic Summit in May, talking about the John and Abigail Adams scholarships that he instituted in Massachusetts. So Tamar Lewin, everybody's talking about Mitt Romney and the 47%. How about Mitt Romney and that 25%, that signature program from his governorship? I've seen Obama campaign pushback on the real impact of the Adams scholarships not being as advertised because there were a lot of fees and you still had to pay room and board. But what would you say the impact has been?
Well, it's a nice program. It's obviously a help. But it's also true that the tuition in Massachusetts, even, you know, of course, this is a few years ago now. The tuition has stayed very, very, very low. The fees have gone through the roof and are many, many times the tuition. So I think tuition is like $1,700 at UMass, and the fees are now like $11,000.
Really? What constitutes
although
a fee?
When he left, that's not fair. It was probably just about 8,000, but still, and that's, there's room and board, and there's your technology fee, and there's all kinds of fees. They've just kept the tuition low, but that isn't even the, all of these state programs, which do help more people go to school, have another thing that I think people in Georgia and a few other places have been looking at. It does keep more of your state kids in state universities.
Uh-huh.
But it also stops the highest performing state kids to some extent from going to better universities, whether they're private ones or out of state ones.
Why?
Because they're not going to get the aid there.
Yeah. Well, and it's also a purely merit based program, right? So if the top 25% of achievers on this test, including, I guess, if you're a millionaire or a billionaire son, qualify for this scholarship, then that is not a needs based program.
Not at all, and you were probably not going to go to your local state college anyway. But also, they did try to even that out a little by making it not the 25% highest in the state, but the 25% highest at each school to make sure that it wouldn't just be the most affluent people.
Roy in Kearney, you're on WNYC. Hi, Roy.
Hello, how are you? And
okay.
Thanks for taking my call. Brian, as I was expressing to the screener, if our government will like to subsidize some of our tuition, at least be in a position to use the very thing that our government was set up on, checks and balances. Meaning, if these colleges are going to allocate all these classes to us, some of them we take that we don't hardly ever use the knowledge that we ascertain, that's another area of waste that I think can be curtailed if the government not so much regulate the class, but at least see if the classes that we're taking are relevant to the degree that we're pursuing.
Are relevant to the degree that you're pursuing and also relevant to the economy. Is that part of your point?
You better believe it.
So government should subsidize a comp lit major less than an engineering major?
Not so much, but at least...
We're getting into dangerous territory.
Somebody's going to deconstruct that, and then I'm going to be in real trouble.
Not at all. I'm just saying that I have taken classes, Brian, that I've never used, and I'm sure everyone who've ever went to college have taken a whole host of classes that had no bearing whatsoever on their degree per se. So why are these classes incumbent upon us to take? Obviously, it's the university that set up these stipulations or the curriculum in particular, and I'm saying that particular waste factor can be basically curtailed if we get a better handle on whether or not what we're taking is going to add to the pursuit that we're pursuing.
Although I guess Royce, people would push back on that idea by saying it's a function of a college education to give you some kind of rounded intellectual grounding in the world. So there should be some requirements from different disciplines.
To what degree, though?
To what degree? That's the question. Roy, thank you very much. And Tamar Lewin, before you go, and we bring on a couple of other guests who are going to have opposing points of view on government's role, just to close the loop on the Romney Adams scholarships. Do you think there's something in what he did at the state level that could be a national model if he becomes president?
I don't think anybody nationally believes we have anywhere near enough money as things are currently running to make free tuition for even a very small top percentage in all the public universities. And how would he coordinate that? We don't have any national higher education system. We just have state higher education systems.
Where did you go to college, Tamar?
Oh, you don't want to do that.
Oh, I was just said it. You don't have to tell me if you don't want. But
no, I went to a wonderful private college. I went to Barnard.
Okay, and so you could. I only ask because you could now that we're done with the interview, you could go to wnyc.org/issues and use this new tool that we have and look up what Barnard was charging when you went. And what they charge today. So there you go. And everybody, you can do that. That's part of our 30 Issues in 30 Days. Issue 4, Affordable College Education Suite online. Go to wnyc.org/issues. And you can actually compare what you paid in tuition at your university when you went to what they're charging at the same institution today. And Tamar Lewin, who covers higher education for the New York Times, thank you so much for starting us off and filling in with so much factual context.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll get those two opposing points of view on what government's role should be in making college affordable coming up next. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, SUNY at Albany grad with subsequent degrees from Ohio State and Columbia. Can't wait to look up what my alma maters are charging now. As we continue with issue 4 in our presidential election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days, what is government's role in making college affordable? Let's hear from some more of you now on what you think college role, government's role should be. Elisa in Manhattan, you're on the air. Hi, Elisa.
Hi, Brian. I teach in the CUNY system, and as you probably know, it was originally called the Free Academy because it was originally free. And there's been a massive generational wealth transfer as the government no longer provides the majority of the funds for public education. My mother went to UC Berkeley for her undergraduate and graduate, and she was able to go through on $5,000 for all 6 years, including living in the dorms, because it was free.
Now, free means taxpayers, many of whom don't go to college, are subsidizing that education. Is that moral and right?
It is, because those people become the engine of the economy and pay far more into the tax system as a result of it. It's an investment in our future.
Elisa, thank you. Ron in Basking Ridge, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ron. What should government's role be?
Yes, hi. Thank you for having me on. How are you today?
I'm okay. Doing great. Thank you for asking. And you've got some college loans to pay, I gather.
Yes, I do. Hold on one second. Yes, I have well in over six figures of debt, as I have a master's degree and a law degree. And these were risks that I was willing to take, and, penny in for a penny, in for a pound. The main issue that I think that is holding back our educational system is the fact that we cannot write off our loans, our tuition, our interest to a significant extent, which is commensurate with our expenditure and our risk. Now the limit is $2,500. I pay almost $8,000 in interest a year, and it's just not keeping abreast with the expense and the risk that I've taken in order to achieve my level. Now I'm just fighting to stay in the middle class, and if I could write off the tuition, the expenses, the capitalized interest, fully every year, it would put me in a whole different financial class and allow me to make moves that are important in my life.
You're saying tax deductions as investments, in effect, right?
Yes, exactly. So if we parallel the mortgage industry, where we can write up all of our mortgage and helps pay for our investment and leads to security, we have a similar kind of mortgage, obviously, on our futures, mm-hmm. and we put it all on our brains and our hard work.
And so why not do that for college loans? Ron, thank you very much. Intriguing idea. Mohammed in Jersey City, you're on the air. Hello, Mohammed.
Hello, hi. Good morning, Brian. Big fan of you.
Thank you.
You're
should
welcome.
Government's role be in making college affordable?
government should control some of the programs that community college has for immigrants, such as EFL program, which is meant only to migrants who doesn't speak English, because those programs are using those immigrants just to generate more profit, such as, because first of all, the credit for that program is double than the major program credit for the price.
I think we're going to have to go because of that buzz in the background, but you're saying basically that there's a lot of private ESL education and they're using it for profits and it would be better off government controlled? Oh, we lost Mohammed's phone line, unfortunately. But, okay, he makes an interesting point. Now, here is Vice President Joe Biden talking about student debt, addressing the administration's middle class task force in January 2010.
Today, the average debt of a graduating senior from college, now listen, the average debt, people of my generation, the average debt is $23,000. That is literally $2,000 more than my first house cost. But in any standard, it's a lot of money. Average debt. Some are graduating with a great deal more debt than that. So our proposal ensures that federal student loan payments for overburdened borrowers are never more than 10% of their income. A change like that makes a real difference for a kid just out of school.
And that was Vice President Biden in 2010. Two opposing points of view now on government's role in funding college educations. First, from Neil McCluskey from the Libertarian Cato Institute. Hi, Neil. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, thanks. Do you share the vice president's concern as he articulated it there?
Well, I mean, I think that debt is too high because the price of college is too high, and it raises at a rate in excess of even health care, I mean, far in excess of health care. The question is, what do you do about it? And it sounds good to say, well, we should have more grants or we should forgive debt. But remember, that is, you know, colleges are in a market, not a good market, a market that is awash in subsidies. And the root problem is if you keep giving people money or telling them you'll forgive their debt, so pay more, basically, for college, those prices will keep going up. Colleges are run by human beings. Human beings want as much money or as many resources or to have as big an empire, generally, you know, as they can. And we see colleges doing that over and over and over. So we have to do kind of the counterintuitive thing, which is reduce the aid so that people aren't willing to pay as much or demand as much that's not educationally necessary as they do now from colleges.
So you're saying if government subsidizes higher education, then they feel free to raise their tuition because they know how much more people will pay out of their own pockets. But in the New York Times Magazine this Sunday, there was a cover story about the University of Virginia and the president there. And I want to read you just a short paragraph from that article. It says, when John Castine, President Sullivan's predecessor, took office as university president in 1990, the state government provided about a quarter of the university's budget. By the time he left, 20 years later, the proportion had dwindled to less than 7%. Castine addressed the gap by fundraising, tapping a devoted alumni network to expand the school's endowment almost tenfold to $4.6 million during his tenure. Even so, it was clear that the school couldn't rely on charity to fill the budgetary gap. The recession made wealthy alumni less generous and drove down middle-class incomes, putting stress on financial aid programs. So that makes it sound like state aid is going down if Virginia is typical of states, and that forced the universities to raise tuition in order to compensate to have enough money for the needed costs of running the school and providing the education. Why not think that that's more the truth?
Well, so there are two things you have to look at that are major here. First of all, that doesn't apply to private schools. And we've seen private colleges and universities have massive tuition inflation. Then if you look at private colleges and universities, you look at a 25-year trend, for the most part, you see that per pupil allocations from state and local governments kind of go up and down with the business cycle, but generally are pretty flat. But what we've seen is if you do a 25-year trend across the country, you see, yes, there's about about a $40 or so decrease each year per pupil in state and local allocations. But you see that those schools increase the amount of money they bring in through tuition by about $80. In other words, for every dollar lost in state and local appropriations on average, those colleges raise their prices by $2. So yes, you can say state and local governments not spending as much per pupil requires some tuition increases, but schools have gone well beyond that. And it also has to be remembered that the total amount that state and local taxpayers have paid into college and university over the last 25 years or so has gone up by 25% in real dollars. So it's not that states are being cheap. It's A, public colleges continue to grab more from tuition because they know they can, and private colleges do the same thing, and we just have more people enrolling in college.
So you think the main reason that tuitions are going up is that people crave college educations, think they're good investments, and are just willing to borrow and spend more than in the past?
I think that obviously there are a lot of things going on here, but I think that's a major one, is we're told everyone should go to college. The federal government in particular gives them money to go to college. And so you see naturally people saying, yes, not only are we going to go to college, but we're going to demand more. So you often hear college and universities say, and I think there's some truth to this, no, we're not raising our prices just because we can. We raise our prices because the reality is students demand more and more things, nicer recreation facilities, you know, bigger campus, newer buildings, better food, and so we have to supply those things. So we have to get more and more and more and more revenue all the time. And the reason that we see students demanding these things is because someone else is giving them the money to pay for it. That's partially grants, that's scholarships to the schools, that's low-interest loans or loans they think they can get forgiven. But it's also that, you know, college education is important for a lot of people, and many people will benefit from it. Although if you look at the stats, we have way more people entering college than actually finishing, because it turns out they're not actually prepared or able to do college work in many cases.
Do you think the goal should be near universal higher education in this country, at least as the president has expressed it, at least 1 year of post-high school, either career training or college, because of the nature of the job market today?
No, it doesn't make sense to say we need a certain amount of time beyond secondary education, or that everybody should get a degree. And the way he says it, it's not always clear what he means. What we should be doing is we need a system that as efficiently as possible provides people the skills or knowledge that they need to move ahead in whatever their job is, or to get what they want, you know, out of life. But it has to be paid for ultimately by people themselves, or money they get voluntarily from others, because we will spend our money that we've earned, a lot more efficiently and with a lot more discretion than we spend other people's. So ultimately, the way to get the system we want, which is the most efficient way to get people's skills and the things they need out of education, is to stop massively subsidizing it and make people pay for it with their own funds or the funds they get from people voluntarily. Charity, for-profit lenders, because if you go to college and you earn a whole lot more money as a result, you're making a profit, and that lender should too. But right now we just say, let's throw money at it, let's give money to students, let's throw it at schools, and we don't say there has to be an impetus put on the student paying themselves.
That's a good libertarian argument, but doesn't that mean that primarily only richer people are going to go to college?
No, absolutely not, because what we see is prices going up at extreme rates, which will tend to, of course, scare off people who don't think they can pay those prices. But that price inflation is largely a factor of most people not paying that sticker price. So if you eliminated the aid, you'd see the prices come to much more normal levels, rational levels. And you'd see also that people would start to say, look, what I want to buy is the specific skills I need. I don't necessarily need to go to a four-year college and get a liberal arts core, and then in addition to that, get the engineering skills I need. You'd see people get much more efficient, lower-priced, effective education you'd see now, because colleges couldn't charge the prices they do, and people, since they'd be using their own money, wouldn't be willing to pay for it. In other words, higher education is a dynamic market, And it's not like the prices are set in isolation of what people can pay.
Neil McCluskey, Associate Director of the Center for Educational Freedom at the Libertarian Cato Institute. Where did you go to school, by the way?
I was an undergraduate at Georgetown University, then went to Rutgers for a master's, and then finishing a PhD at George Mason.
All right. And you can go to our WNYC.org/issues page and use the new tool that we put up where you can compare what you paid during any of those years that you went to any of those schools and what they charge now for tuition. So in case you're interested, thanks a lot for coming on.
Well, I'm scared to look at that information, but thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC on our presidential election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days. See all 30 at WNYC.org/issues. And that tuition comparing tool from when you went, if you're a college graduate, to what they charge at the same universities today. And as we continue with issue 4, how to make college affordable, here is President Obama from this year's State of the Union address after talking about increasing federal aid.
Of course, it's not enough for us to increase student aid. We can't just keep subsidizing skyrocketing tuition. We'll run out of money. States also need to do their part by making higher education a higher priority in their budgets. And colleges and universities have to do their part by working to keep costs down.
And joining us now, Anya Kamenetz, senior writer for Fast Company magazine and author of books including DIYU, Edupunks, Edupreneurs, and the Coming Transformation of Higher Education, and also the book Generation Debt. Hi, Anya. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Can you remind us of what you saw that inspired your first book, Generation Debt?
Sure. So graduating from college, you know, in the midst of the post-9/11 recession and seeing all the indicators that found that this was really the first generation that was not going to do as well financially as their parents had done. You know, the student loan numbers, two-thirds are graduating with some amount of student loan debt that average goes around, but it's certainly above $20,000, maybe as high as $27,000. Default rates at 8.8% and rising, and then smacking into very high unemployment for young adults, a lot of precariousness in the job market, which makes it harder and harder for people to pay off their loans and make good on that investment in themselves.
In April, you had an opinion piece on CNN calling for President Obama to push bankruptcy relief for student loan debt. Explain what you were calling for exactly.
Well, so student loans have been non-dischargeable in bankruptcy actually since the 1970s, and since 2005, even private unsubsidized loans have been, you know, there's no bankruptcy relief at all unless you're willing to go in front of a judge and say, you know, I'm basically disabled, I'm never going to work again. But very few people are ever able to walk away from this debt, and the government can seize your garnish your wages, seize your tax returns, your Social Security payments to pay off the student loans. And so it really puts people in a terrible catch-22. You know, if they take out the loans, they take that risk, and for some reason it doesn't go the way they expected, unlike all consumer debt, all other loans, we are leaving young people with this albatross around their necks that it's almost impossible to get rid of.
What did you think of the arguments that our previous guest from the Cato Institute was making about how this web of subsidies actually encourages college to increase their tuitions and fees?
Well, you know, it's kind of a funny point because I think actually even Joe Biden made a similar point accidentally. This is a gaffe on the campaign trail saying, you know, there is a role in subsidies, and when subsidies are not targeted correctly, they can lead to a distortion in the market. And I think we see that in healthcare as well as in education, where costs go up but performance does not. However, where I would depart from, you know, the libertarian point of view is I really do believe there's a strong public role in making college more affordable as well as more accessible. You know, affordability is really about can middle-class families, you know, fit this into their budget, but accessibility is the bottom line of, you know, are we making these opportunities available to people from all walks of life if they're able to take advantage of them? And that's where I think our country's really falling short.
What else do you see as the reason that tuition inflation is rising so much faster than general inflation?
Well, the tuition inflation, you know, rising twice the rate of inflation, in the public sector, this has been studied pretty carefully, that really it's a matter of cost shifting. So, you know, public universities, the states decrease funding, often in hard economic times, and the colleges then go on and raise the tuition because that's how they can reclaim that revenue. You know, the idea that it's all about perks or that it's about faculty salaries, I think, is a little bit misguided because actually they're spending less money on instruction. There's more money going to administrative costs and staffing, but not on the payment for tenured faculty positions. That's actually going down.
So how do you compare Romney and Obama on affordable higher ed policy? Is either of them much different from the other when you come down to it?
Oh, I think so. I mean, there's been a lot of great moves that have been made by the Obama administration and particularly Department of Ed in the last few years. Probably the most important one is getting, a large role for banks out of the federal student loan program. So all loans are now coming directly from the Department of Education, and that simple move saved billions of dollars in subsidies that was going directly into the pockets of banks. It's really important that he expanded income-based repayment. This is a payment program that holds your repayment down to 10% of your income. This program is still very undersubscribed. Not enough people know about this. It's really important for people who are listening to know that if you, you can go online, ibrinfo.org is a good nonprofit website, to learn if you're eligible for that type of program to limit your repayment. And then the kinds of incentives that he's putting in as well, I think, are really, really important. In the State of the Union address, he talked about trying to get colleges to compete and have actually a race to the top style innovation competition for affordability and making them accountable if they are not serving enough Pell Grant recipients, and not enough lower-income students, and if there are increases in tuition are higher than the average for that sector, kind of making them publish it and explain the reason why.
So Mitt Romney, just very briefly, we had trouble finding clips of him talking about higher education on the
right.
Stump. Obama talks about it all the time. The most prevalent clip of Romney is him saying that illegal immigrants shouldn't be given in-state tuition. Other than that, there's not a lot out of his mouth about the topic.
Well, the conservative point of view is really admirably expressed by McCluskey in that, they kind of think this is going to take care of itself, that if people, that private charities should take care of it. Romney's received some heat because he paid for a scholarship, a state scholarship in Massachusetts, the Adams Scholarship, that ended up basically going to higher income students because it was based on quote-unquote merit or test scores. So I don't see a lot of interest in making this right amongst the conservative political agenda. And I think part of that is, the banks that handle a lot of the student loans and the private student loans are very big contributors. And John Boehner was one of the, Sallie Mae's favorite senator during the time that he was head of the Education Committee. So I think that there are some connections there.
All right. Anya Kamenetz, the third of our three perspectives on government's role in making college affordable. She's a senior writer for Fast Company and author of the books DIYU and Generation Debt. Anya, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's it for today's edition of our presidential election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days. We have an active comments page on this. Go to our show page, wnyc.org/issues, and post your comment. You can see all 30 issues there, too, and you can get some of the conversations going in advance of their radio days. Also, you can read some great articles related to today's issue on our site, thanks to longform.org. We've got those links there. And don't forget, the WNYC Data News team is posting really great interactive graphics for illuminating some of the issues, and the one we have up today is really fun, if sometimes a little depressing, and that is the tool with which you can compare the tuition when you went to your school to what they charge at the same place today, all at wnyc.org/issues. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We went a little long with our education segment today, so we only have a few minutes left for the call-in that we planned. And I hate to give short shrift to the Occupy movement, but this is the one-year anniversary yesterday. The Loose Coalition made a big splash but explicitly refused over the course of the year to adopt a specific policy platform or endorse candidates in the 2012 election. So let's just take our last 6 or 7 minutes here with the question, what's been the impact of Occupy in your opinion? If you've been a member or a supporter of the movement, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Skeptically, somebody could easily look at this movement and say, hey, you're on the outside looking in. The Tea Party started, took the House of Representatives, got one of their own, in effect, as the vice presidential nominee for the Republican Party. But the Occupy movement had bigger protests going in Charlotte at the Democratic convention than they did in Tampa at the Republican convention and outside looking in. Nevertheless, President Obama, from a speech last December, seemed to push for something inspired by Occupy and their emphasis on inequality, known as the Buffett Rule.
A quarter of all millionaires now pay lower tax rates than millions of you, millions of middle-class families. Some billionaires have a tax rate as low as 1%. 1%. That is the height of unfairness. It is wrong.
Wink, wink, 1%. Yes, he was talking about a tax rate of 1%, but you get the sense that he was also obliquely referring to the 1% that the Occupy movement has certainly succeeded in putting into our lexicon. Do you think there's been an impact? Give us a call. We'll take your calls in a minute. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Your quick thoughts on the Occupy movement at 1, right after this.